idea. But no, this is just a kind of a thumbnail sketch of each of the chapters. And some of these are quite extensive. Auschwitz, I think, what took us 3 weeks to get through that.
Okay.
But this is on chapter 17 on Dachau and the official narrative and what they've presented. And also
we'll talk about Dachau.
Oh, yeah, Dachau. Well, our experience with people.
We've had a lot of talk about Dachau in our past videos. So
largely what it isn't. That's what it isn't.
Yeah, okay. So go ahead. Why don't you continue on?
Okay.
I got to get my glasses in.
All right. Dachau was opened in March of 1933 on the grounds of the disused Royal Bavarian Powder and Munitions Factory at Dachau. The camp was, in fact, a large prison. Inmates were mostly political prisoners, but they also included conventional criminals such as severe repeat offenders, prostitutes, beggars, the homeless, addicts, and others regarded as antisocial by the Reich. The media image of Dachau as a place where only Jews were interned is therefore completely untrue, as the official guide points out. And we've learned a lot of things about Dachau, that it was a holding center for basically criminals. And more as the Reich gained some momentum, political, communist, particularly since Munich was the center of communism in Germany. They had an actual holdout. And then, of course, Berlin was a strong center. The camp was, in fact, a large prison. Inmates were just said that. Sorry. I've got a cat here. Hold on a second. I don't want her knocking over my drink. Okay. All right. On page 296, by 1940, the number of prisoners in the camp had reached 10,000, and it was severely overcrowded at that point. To deal with this, a network of 140 sub-camps were established, all set up to provide labor to the surrounding industries. By 1944, two large sub-complexes of Dachau concentration camp and Mühldorf and Landsberg had been created, where prisoners were employed to build enormous bunkers that were to house production facilities for fighter planes. The severe overcrowding combined with Allied bombing that cut off regular supplies and ironically a result of shortage of Zyklon B led to a lice infestation at the camp. This resulted in an outbreak of typhus, and the death toll from this debilitating disease increased dramatically. In April of 1945, the U.S. Army occupied Dachau and freed all the prisoners. The Western media was allowed into the camp, and just as had been the case with Bergen-Belsen, see the following chapter in this book, I guess that's up next. They were able to photograph gruesome-looking piles of emaciated bodies. These images were presented to the world, and they still are, as dead Jews gassed by Nazis, quote unquote. The fact that most of these unfortunate victims were not Jews and had died from typhus, a disease that had spun out of control, primarily because the Germans could not obtain regular supplies of lice exterminating Zyklon B due to Allied bombing, was and still is overlooked by not only the hoax storytellers, but the world as well. However, a new development emerged from these dreadful scenes. Claims arose that there was a gas chamber at Dachau, likely influenced by Soviet propaganda about gas chambers in the camps in Poland. A general hysteria took hold, and prisoners began telling their American liberators that there was also a killing center in Dachau. So the 7th U.S. Army report on Dachau, origin of the Dachau gas chamber myth, and I'm not going to go into a great deal of this because this is where this gas chamber myth had occurred. So I'm jumping over to page 301, just the title, Initial Doubts About the Dachau Gas Chamber Emerge. And then 302, The Dachau Gas Chamber, A Physical Examination. Present day visitors to the Dachau campsite are still informed that there's a gas chamber in the building at the camp, which houses the crematorium. However, the information signs now clearly state that no one was ever gassed at Dachau and that the gas chamber was never used. Must appeared on page 16 of the New York Times because we did not see a retraction of this. They don't care about the facts, don't care about the duplicity of the so-called facts, that they contradict each other. Only that they get out there. The Dachau gas chamber was clearly designed for use as a morgue and washing room to hold bodies for the crematorium, which is right next door, as can be seen from the illustration of the building's layout. And then they talk about the shower faucets. These fake shower heads are not attached to any pipes and are very evidently later additions to the room made in an effort to bolster the gas chamber narrative. The fact that they are not connected to any pipes and thus could never have been used to administer water or gas is acknowledged as a challenge by the Holocaust storytellers. Some of them claim that Zyklon B pellets would actually have been administered through, boy, you're a brave kitty, a side panel from the outside, which opened and closed a small aperture in the wall. And the fact that this contradicts the U.S. Army report and the Nuremberg evidence does not appear to concern the hoax storytellers. And furthermore, the gas chamber has an open ventilation shaft in the roof, a physical structure which makes the gassing claims even more untenable. And there are numerous pictures in this. In other words, a physical examination of the Dachau gas chamber reveals that it could never have been designed for use as a gas chamber. And every time he uses the term gas chamber, it's with quotes. And that all claims that it was not used stem precisely from that fact. I'm on page 308. U.S. Army reports many gas chambers as clothing delousing facilities. So they're going to think that they can erect the 6 million number, the huge numbers of people killed by the many closets that were used for delousing clothing. The Dachau crematorium, as in all the camps and elsewhere, was used for hygienic disposal of the remains of people who had died from natural causes or from individual judicial executions in the camp. It was sometimes even employed to cremate bodies from outside Dachau. People would actually send their dead to Dachau to be cremated. In the Allied raids of Munich in September, during which 30,000 people were killed, the city's Archbishop, Cardinal Faulhaber, requested Dachau camp authorities' assistance in cremating the bombing victims. Dachau casualty figures officially reduced from 238,000 to 41,500. That's a considerable reduction. But remember that 10,000, they were crowded. Admittedly, I guess they had created more living facilities. The U.S. Army report reveals Jews only constituted 8% of Dachau prisoners. They had an assortment of others. The report also reveals that infamous emaciated body pictures were not from Dachau, likely Bergen-Belsen. And so you're getting not only conflicting information, but erroneous information. The U.S. 7th Army's report clarifies that the shocking images of emaciated bodies now synonymous with Dachau did not originate from Dachau. They were typhus victims being evacuated to Dachau from all points. The Dachau bordello revealed by Camp Museum guidebook would not be something that would be critical to an extermination camp. Okay, conclusion, and this is the critical part. Again, this particular chapter has a lot of pictures that decry and refute the official story of the things that were claimed to have happened. Their own information refutes it. From the above overview of Dachau, the following conclusions can be drawn. The camp primarily served as a prison for political prisoners and seasoned conventional criminals. As the camp expanded, it evolved into an extensive network of sub-camps providing labor for the Reich's war effort. As the Allied bombing campaign escalated, the delivery of essentials such as life-exterminating Zyklon B, medical supplies, and food to the camp was disrupted, leading to a typhus epidemic. When the U.S. Army liberated Dachau, a propaganda campaign emerged, alleging that the camp possessed gas chambers, similar to the assertions the Soviets made for the camps in Poland. And again, if you recall, the Soviets came up with these to create an atrocity narrative against the Germans to hide their own, the Soviets' own, and later the Allies' own atrocities that they had committed, particularly against the Germans. At one point, a mortuary room in the building that housed the camp's crematorium was modified and equipped with counterfeit showerheads for propaganda. The U.S. Army's OSS report subsequently asserted that this room functioned as a gas chamber, that there were five other minor gas chambers, and that gassings occurred in Dachau. The minor gas chambers were delousing closets for clothing. The purported gas chamber could not have operated as such. It is clearly inappropriate for that use, lacking an airtight seal and connecting to the remainder of the building through a drainage system. Confronted with this evidence, the whole hoax storytellers eventually conceded that no gassing transpired, but maintained that the room was intended as a gas chamber. However, they cannot articulate why it was never utilized for that purpose. So they're imposing a motivation that they can't prove. It is now also candidly acknowledged that the five small gas chambers cited in the U.S. Army report were indeed fumigation chambers utilized to disinfect clothing with Zyklon B. The assertions regarding Dachau and its gas chambers stand as a potent illustration of the hyperbole and falsehoods which permeate propaganda about the entire concentration camp system. But conclusively, there were no gas chambers in Germany, period. Okay, so they're debunking it, as it turns out, one by one, one camp by camp. And that's what Peter Winter's doing, and Dave Gaheri edited this eighth edition, debunking the even the possibility, the conflicting testimonies, the conflicting reports. Somebody's got to ask that question. Chapter 18 is next, Bergen-Belsen next week, Lord willing.
Okay, yeah. Well, anyway, this topic about Dachau, it's been a big topic with us because we've been having debates with, I had a debate with Michael Jones about this, and he just cannot accept what I said in my discussion with him. He just will not accept it.
Nothing that we share with him is acceptable.
Well, I mean, first of all, I mean, like I said, this has so many pictures of all the things that are very important for people to see.
To understand about the camp, particularly like the showerhead myth.
Well, first of all, let's just get into the camp itself. The camp came into existence in 1933.
Yeah.
This was way before, things really started getting cooking with the Germans, you know.
As they're being accused of extermination.
Well, they had to, first of all, put political people in the camps. Mm-hmm. That was probably the first thing that happened with these camps, political prisoners.
Particularly of the communist persuasion.
Yeah. And here's the biggest thing. Let me just put my glasses on so I can read it to you. Because the one that shows the map, not the map, but the... I can't really see.
Okay. Let's see. What page is that on?
It's on 315.
Thank you.
But anyway, it shows who was in the camp, okay?
Only 8% were Jews? Is that the...
Well, there's only 2,539 Jews in Dachau out of a total of 31,000.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, that's peanuts, okay? Yeah. That's peanuts. And they do... Again, I didn't see it on this little chart. I didn't see... How many Catholics, they said, Catholic priests were put in the camp. Some people claimed there was 2,500 clergy. Now, that included Catholics and the Protestants. I understood it. There might have been 400 Catholic priests in the camp. But again, the biggest question is, why were the priests in the camps?
Yeah.
And E. Michael Jones, he just has this thing, and Gemma... Again, we love them dearly. They do their best exposing the Jews. We get it. But they just don't understand that the Catholic priests that were put in their camp were put there because they probably were dissidents or communists.
They were subversive is what they were. Subversive. That's why they were being imprisoned.
That's why they were in the camps.
Nothing to do with religion.
Yeah, and E. Michael Jones... He tends to go with the Jewish view and getting it from them and what they say happened. And it's all lies. And Lentz, who was a Catholic priest, he gives his story. And, of course, his story has been latched on to by the Holocaust Museum. I mean,
Joe
really?
Found that out, yeah.
I mean, are you – really, you're going to – but E. Michael Jones, you're going to go with Lentz when Lentz, his testimony – the Jews in the Holocaust Museum are loving
it. As we understand it, in 1960, according to what Joe had said, that Lentz had been commissioned to write his story. So he was the Catholic poster child for the Holocaust Museum. You can't trust that kind of testimony.
Right, right. So here's the problem, okay? See, E. Michael Jones, he writes books. So we're covering his book, The Holocaust Narrative, E. Michael Jones. My brother Joe covering that book, okay? He did a good job. We went all the way to not quite the last chapter. We had one more chapter to go and Joe died. Okay, so that was the end of that. I don't have the book, okay? Yeah. Joe had the book.
Right.
I said, well, this lets me buy the book. Let's just Joe cover it. And he did a pretty good job with it. And the last chapter, which I didn't know what it was, honestly.
Joe was said.
About Lentz.
Yeah, and Dachau priests.
Yeah. And so we never got a chance to cover
to discuss
Michael Jones' book here on that chapter. But it didn't matter to me because I already understood what was going on in Dachau. I understood that Lentz was probably a communist infiltrator. He was put in the camp because of that reason. But Michael Jones wants you to think Lentz was put in the camp because he was a Catholic. It makes no sense because all the Catholics in Germany, nothing happened to them.
No, or Austria, or any of the other occupied territories. And the problem is, Lentz had, we even read a Gestapo report, and interestingly, E. Michael Jones doesn't consider that a valid report. I said, well, they have nothing to gain. All they're doing is reporting. And a lot of the Polish priests are going to be negative toward Germans anyway, because the Poles were definitely anti-German. And so you've got Polish priests, and Hitler said, and I'd like to just quote, if I could, the Concordat. Essentially, by terms of the Concordat, the church renounced all political activities, and in turn, the state guaranteed the Third Reich guaranteed the right to free worship, to circulate pastoral epistles. That's written material. To maintain Catholic schools and property. And if they cooperated and were not involved politically, they could carry on with their Catholic thing. If they did not and got involved in the political process, like Lentz would compel or cause other priests to come to him, and during the confession, he would present the propaganda against the Third Reich. This was reported by the Gestapo reports. I bet they were just, another one of these. And so... We learned that he wasn't the true blue Catholic that's being declared of him, and why the Holocaust Museum might have wanted to induct him into the poster boy Hall of Fame in their museum.
That's right. So it's a big problem. E. Michael Jones, everybody makes fun of me because I don't write books and this or that, and I'm not an academic like E. Michael Jones.
Not everybody can be.
I got common sense, folks. When you understand that the majority of Catholics were okay in Germany, they were doing fine. All the priests were doing fine. They celebrated the masses. They had their parochial schools or whatever they were doing. But Gemma and E. Michael Jones want you to think, they took the crucifixes out of the schools. Well, let's find out why that happened.
Could it have happened? You remember what we said about the Concordat?
Well, I'm just saying maybe the priests that were teaching in those schools, or maybe even the nuns if they had nuns, maybe they were part of the seditionist type of movement, communist.
Yes. Yeah.
And Hitler just said, "You're out of here."
Yeah, you could close them down and clear out these schools.
That's right. So I'm not denying that it happened.
No.
I'm not denying that Hitler could have closed these some of these schools, that Catholic schools. I'm not saying it couldn't happen, but if it did happen, it was because there was something screwy going on in that school that Hitler didn't want to happen. And so, anyway, this is great information here to expose that communist crap that they're trying to give us. Go ahead.
And they Vinny. I have a number of things that Lentz was being accused of. He did talk about the crucifixes, and you have to understand it all. I never got a response from E. Michael Jones or Gemma in any way about the violation of the Concordat. Seems very clear to me. And Hitler never pretended to be a democracy or a republic. It was a dictatorship. He made the rules, but he did not come after the Catholics for the main reason that his mom was Catholic and he honored her memory. The second thing is there's so many freaking Catholics in Germany and Austria alone, let alone Czechoslovakia or any of the other Hungary and so on, that that would be impossible. He was only interested in those that came against the Third Reich, period.
Right. Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah. So anyway, you know, what can I say about E. Michael Jones? I mean, if he wants to keep promoting lies, which he's doing, that's what it is. He's lying to people about Lentz, about Dachau, about the priest in Dachau. I'm just going off the wrong side here. I mean, he's just doesn't get it.
So anyway, that was interesting. And I have more information, which I have already sent to E. Michael Jones. John Ware wrote I didn't think it was critical enough, but in accumulating information, John Ware, who has written a number of books and articles, of, I guess, for the Barnes Review and such, basically says, from the above report, we can begin to understand why Father, I call him Friar, Lentz was prosecuted by the German government and why it was right and proper of them to do so. He was inciting his congregation against the Reich by spreading false rumors. Worst of all, Lentz was using the Catholic confessionals and the churches to spread his seditious political activities, compelling other priests to come through the confessionals so he could promote this. Anyway, I mentioned that before. And I sent this to E. Michael Jones in January. And he did. In fact, Jim had presented a number of things, and E. Michael Jones responded with, "Where are you, the Pope now?" So there was no actual response to anything Jim said. Nothing.
Yeah, E. Michael Jones, he has his agenda. His agenda is to do whatever you can to beef up the Catholic Church in their situation in Germany at the time to make it look good for them. And if you ever get a chance, watch the video I put up with E. Michael Jones and Charles Moskowitz. it's very good because, actually, Charles Moskowitz, I agreed with him in the beginning when he was talking to E. Michael Jones because he was showing. See, E. Michael Jones and Charles Moskowitz are two peas in a pod, okay? Charles Moskowitz thinks all the Jews that were put in the camps because they were Jews.
Yeah.
And that's not the reason why they were put in the camps. Because there were a lot of Jews that were not put in camps.
Yeah, why? That's true.
Why? Because they weren't opposing Germany. Yeah. They weren't put in the camps. All right?
Right.
And we got testimony. Diane interviewed Holocaust survivors, true Holocaust survivors.
Well, right? The German survivors, yeah.
Well, true German Holocaust survivors.
Yeah.
If you want to call them that.
Yeah.
And they admitted that they were in towns and cities where Jews had the temples and everything was flourishing fine for them. They were not opposed at all. So why? Why could that happen? So again, get back to Charles Moskowitz. See, he was right. He came after E. Michael Jones and says, E. Michael Jones, you're wrong. Those priests that were in Dachau weren't put in there because they were Catholic.
Yeah.
And so he took them up on that. Now, E. Michael Jones, on the other hand, comes back to Charles Moskowitz. Charles, you know, the Jews were not put in the camps because they were Jews. So.
Yeah, they were enemies of the state. And they were right about each other's claims to victimhood. They were not right about their own. So yes. I thought that was interesting.
The whole problem here is E. Michael Jones wants victimhood for the Catholics because he's pushing the Jews out, and the Catholics now are taking place of the Jews' victimhood. Okay?
It's a so victimhood vacuum.
Yeah.
That's what it is. Oh, anyway, I feel that E. Michael Jones is trying to redeem, 300 to 2100, 1800 years of Catholic atrocities against Protestants and other regular people. By claiming them, giving them victimhood, and the one thing that you can't argue against, and you get a blanket acceptance in the Holocaust narrative.
Right. Yeah.
Trying
so
to
anyway,
redeem them.
This is our truth of what we feel happened with Dachau, the truth that we can refute E. Michael Jones, which, again, he hasn't budged an inch on this.
No, does he really want to engage in the conversation
He won't get in the conversation about it because he's wrong. That's why.
Well, right. He has no foundation. He'll fall in the hole if he tries to debate.
I'm afraid you're right. Yes. Right. Yes.
So anyway, that's where we stand. There, we've talked so much about this.
I know.
In our walk and talks and everything. I've exposed E. Michael Jones. Look, I like E. Michael Jones. He comes after the Jews. I like that.
Yeah, he
but
really
the point is, he's just replacing the Jews with his Catholicism.
He tries to.
Well, you know, the Jews have the Talmud. The Catholics have the Catechism.
That's
what we're dealing with here. And, you know, E. Michael Jones wants us all to be Catholics. Okay, that's what he wants us to do. All
if
be
you
Catholics.
Challenge him biblically, do not use your ritual, your catechism. It must be in the Bible, and you cannot say, oh, well, that doesn't mean that, or that doesn't count. Because they dismissed a number of things. We've got about a couple dozen things that have transpired with the Catholic Church that flies in the face of scriptural integrity. And we've sent out this list before. The one thing was that the catechism or the ritual or the tradition is equal to scriptural truth. Yikes.
Right. Okay, so that topic has been covered. It was good we went over Dachau. I'm glad we covered that.
Yeah, me too.
And if you go on my BitChute channel, you're going to see E. Michael Jones. I put two videos up. One today I actually put up two. He had another discussion about, he got a new, it's not a new book, but he has a book he revamped, redone.
Sexual Revolution.
The Sexual Revolution one.
Libido Dominandi.
Libido Dominandi. Okay, right.
Oh, okay.
And so he talks about that book. And that's fine. You know, I'm not saying what E. Michael Jones is saying is wrong, because he's right on a lot of things.
Oh, yeah.
It's just he is wrong about Hitler. He's wrong about Dachau. He's wrong about Lentz. He's wrong. He's wrong about a bunch of things that are important things. But he's right about how he comes after the Jews, that the Jews are controlling everything. He's all right, all of that stuff.
That's right.
And I let him talk, okay? Because it's tough listening to him, especially when he gets into his Catholic nonsense. He really, you know, goes off into the Catholic nonsense, saying everybody's going to be a Catholic and everybody's returning to the Catholic Church. And I'm saying, oh, my God, the Catholic Church, that's the last place you want to be.
Yeah.
Especially today when we see, I mean, I could talk about this later after we talk with Henry, but we could talk about this later about some of the things the Catholic Church is involved in now. So I'll deal with that later if I remember to get to it. Okay, we got Henry.
Interestingly, a little segue for Henry.
Hey, Henry.
I can think of one place worse than the cat being in the Catholic Church, and that's being the hall of hell in the synagogue there where he demonstrates.
Yeah.
Well, the today I looked on the scheduling for the synagogues, and there wasn't much going on today, and that was true. There wasn't much going on. I don't have my phone, but I think the final score was 16-7. So we again we won. We've only lost once. Chris says we've lost twice, but of course he doesn't have my sharp 78-year-old memory, so he's probably wrong. This is the Washtenaw Jewish News, and I checked it out early this morning before I went to work, and on page 10, if you can scroll up. This Diana, if you can get us up to page 10, I thought I saw something that was pretty interesting, and I wrote a little email to Chris and the friends we have, and I said that there it is. Taking a look at these three pictures, the first is IDF soldiers meeting with so-called Michigan Jewish war veterans.
They meant veterans.
Yeah, it says veterans. They meant veterans. We'll give them the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah.
And it's probably not a Jewish thing to misspell. It's everybody.
Veterans? Yeah.
But, you know, how many Jewish veterans are there? I mean, like six or something like that. And these guys are meeting with IDF soldiers, war criminals, in my mind.
Yeah.
And I think they should be thrown out of our country, and you know, either be an American or be an Israeli. But you know, make your mind up. And then the second photograph is what I think is the altar in Beth Israel congregation where the IDF soldier is speaking. So I sent this to Chris, and I said, if we ever needed another reason to protest at Beth Israel congregation, here it is. Mm-hmm. They're hosting war criminals to speak to the Jewish congregants.
But it should be mentioned that way, too.
And of course, it won't be mentioned like that in this in this newspaper. And then the last one, I guess the guy is, they only give him his first name. He's meeting with state legislatures in Michigan. So, they're covering so many bases, but they can't on one hand say that I'm protesting a house of worship.
Right.
Unless they spell it W-A-R.
Yeah, worship, yeah.
Yeah, but for them to say that and for them and then to host a guy like that, I mean, and ironically, though I didn't ever request a session with the congregation on the pulpit there, the altar, I wanted to have a discussion about what I found when I went to Palestine in the year 2002. Mm. And of course, they never gave me access, and that's what led to the protests there in the first place. But today was a mild day; we didn't get harassed by anybody. One man came across the street while I was on the other side, and I crossed back over to see if he had any questions, and he saw me coming, and he must have been afraid of my massive 148-pound frame because he's split.
You're very intimidating, Henry, I have to admit.
I'm intimidating. And also, Diane, a little aside to you personally is that I was late getting back here to the house to join the Hoax Busters. Because Margot suggested that we go to this wonderful Italian cheesesteak hoagie place in nearby Ypsilanti, and had your daughter lived in Ann Arbor, and I went to the airport to pick you up, I would have. It's a mandatory stop for all
my goodness. I pick up
to come back because it's a short distance from the airport.
I understand
that, but you had to go to Toledo, so that was the problem. And you didn't get to taste this, which I think is the best cheesesteak hoagies west of Philadelphia.
That's quite a declaration.
And Jim may argue that you got good ones in Texas or Boston or whatever.
Oh, not Texas. We don't specialize in.
I don't know what the hell goes on in Texas. Cheesesteak is hard to mess up. If you know how to cook a good cheesesteak, the biggest thing with that is you gotta have good bread. See, I'm a even though I don't eat bread now, I don't really eat white bread or anything like that. And look how healthy I am. I mean, you could tell it's really working well.
Well, with me, you don't know. If you're in recovery.
I don't eat any of this stuff, and my arteries are getting clogged up. You know what I'm saying? I don't know what. But anyway, it's hard to goof up a. The bread is what makes it. Let me just tell you right now.
Well, Margo just says that's just what you need is a cheesesteak hoagie now.
Yeah. Well, actually, the cheesesteak would have been fine, except this big, ginormous, sofa-size hoagie sandwich bread part.
No. Oh no! I'm not a fanatic of some. If I was with you that day today, you were there, I would have definitely eaten one. But I just don't eat. A lot of stuff now, but anyway.
Yeah. Well, let's make it a date for the future that the three.
Oh, bless your heart.
let's hope I can be around to do it. All right.
At least be able to.
All right, so Henry, that was not much going on with your protest there.
Not much today. No, the black guy didn't show up. The white guy didn't show up. Didn't have any conversation with the security guard. The turnout at the synagogue was low. The traffic was a little low, but
it's good. That's very good.
We're honing in. I mean, I'm kind of concerned. My Palestinian friend, I think, has dropped us because I think in her mind we concentrate too much on the Jews. But
who's causing their problem in Gaza?
you can see that you know, they're really ramping up, they being the Jews, are really ramping up their Hollywood and their television miniseries.
Oh, yeah.
They have what We're the Lucky Ones. There's the Holocaust by Bullets. There's Tattoo Artists of the Tattooist of Auschwitz.
Saw that one.
We talked about that.
Yeah.
Treasure Review or something like that. The New Look. Transatlantic, A Small Light, and All the Light We Cannot See. I mean, they're just pumping out Holohoax movies, you know. And so I hope to be able to address the city council on Monday. That's going to be my plan. I may chicken out. We'll see.
Since when?
I have to remind myself that this is what I've decided to do, is just take this little 1.5 hour or 1 hour and 1.25 hour a week protest, and that's it. And you know, I'm going to extend where I can and not hold myself accountable where I can't.
Well, so, do you know that Trump is completely supporting? I mentioned this on a walk and talk, and I'll just read this real quick. He complains about the Israel lobby losing influence on Congress. Huh. And Fox News' Sean Hannity complained in an interview, and as it once did, and vowed he would be a staunch supporter of Israel if reelected. You know, Israel was the most powerful lobby in the country 15 years ago. Today, between TLAIB and AOC and all of these people, what they're doing, Israel, they don't have the backing that they once had, Trump said. Trump made similar comments about Israel's influence in Congress in an interview with Israel Hayom back in March. Some 15 years ago, Israel had the strongest lobby. If you were a politician, you couldn't say anything bad about Israel. That would be like the end of your political career, he said. It still is. So anyway, Trump is really ramping up his personal support and his promise to restore the influence that Israel has on Congress. Doesn't that make you warm and fuzzy?
Well, you know,
because you're doing such a great job. Yeah.
Your email that you send out, and I've said before, I don't read all of them scrupulously. I read what I can, and I look at what I can. But you had like a number of articles and videos of Trump.
Yeah, that's my grocery list.
Yeah, to the point where you really reached me, Diane.
Bless your heart. Thank you.
This is, you know, something that, you know, I was used to. A friend of mine at work once told me that people don't vote for people, they vote against people. You know, and I accepted that, and that's probably part of a reality. But what I always glossed over was the cynical nature of that. You know, and I really... Right. If we're going to be truthers, or if Henry's going to be truthers, you know, he has to toe some line. And that is, I don't want to play a game where cynicism is the rule. You know, I really would like to vote for somebody so that if, you know, if my choice was between Jim Rizzoli and E. Michael Jones, I might have to do a lot of head scratching and stuff like that, because, you know, but they're both, you know, saying what I want to, you know, what I agree with. And to vote against somebody just seems, you know, and now the electoral process is being so distorted.
And hijacked, and clearly, it's corrupted.
Yeah, and clearly, since there are more registered Democrats in this country than there are Republicans, every chance to expand the voting day into weeks into absentee ballot into just all this open access clearly is a biased you know, mechanism that they are using to ensure Democrats get more votes than Republicans.
It won't make any difference. You either have rhinos or you would say Dino. Well, no, they're actually doing what Democrats are supposed to do. That you can trust. But the rhinos are also supporting the Democratic platform. So you don't have support. You have what I just read, that if you're a politician, you've got to get the stamp of approval from Israel. You ask Cynthia McKinney, if Traficant were alive, you would ask him. He's, by the way, you know, in Ohio. Was an Ohio congressman. Yeah, but like Diana said, voting is gone. Our political process has been corrupted and hijacked. It's not an election. It's a selection. So what do you do? People have been asking us, what do you do? You get the word out. What you do, Henry, you do that through your picketing in a lot of ways. You go to the city councils and you get the word out in that way. The battlefield is the information, because they're coming after us about the information. That's what anti-Semitism
is. And it works local.
I liked working the polls.
I know, I know.
And I think I'm going to quit that. I don't think
it's worthless.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't think that it's viable anymore. I don't think that there's no harm in spending one day to vote, and you got to get out and get the vote. It's your vote. It should be something that you enshrine. Your ability to vote, at least you're going to buy into the system a little bit, but it just, so I think I'm going to throw the whole bag of liquor out into the garden.
You have, your time is valuable. You and I and Jim are on borrowed time, however you want to look at it. Wouldn't you like to promote the things that are important to you? And I would say positive, because I don't like positive and negative, and an effective venue like you're doing now.
Well, bless you. You think I'm being effective? We're just chiseling away at this wall that's immense. Jewish power is immense.
That's right.
You know, look at they're just cranking up a Holocaust narrative. Are being so rigid. They will not. You know, I haven't heard anything back from my friend Molly.
I bet not.
About giving her the book, and did anything happen of that? You know, well, her husband and I are going to get together a month from now. We're going to motorcycle to Colorado.
Oh, he's one. Okay.
And he's going to be my friend. She's going to be my friend. I really am trying to get some sort of a Christian perspective on this, and in terms of at least hating the sin and loving the sinner, because it's. We went to a memorial service today, and it was a really nice guy. He was really well known in Ann Arbor. He was the old coach of the high school football team in the early 60s, went to a state championship, became a songwriter, became a folklore reader and writer, produced plays that he self-wrote. And he had tons of Jewish friends that were there and performing and stuff like that. And so it's, in some ways, maybe you guys feel like this or maybe not. I'll check in with you. But it just, you know, I think we're ahead of our time. And I think maybe at some point, if I'm going to be kind to these people that are dissing us now, they just haven't learned enough.
Well, one thing is that Jesus has said, particularly in Matthew 7, this is his Sermon on the Mount. He has just presented however long took for him to relay, you know, blessed are the poor in spirit, so on, to love your enemies, pray for those who persecute you. And then he gets to chapter 7, don't throw your pearls before swine. The thing is, people, and you have to determine who that is. You have to determine if it's worth your while to present the information that for you are pearls, they're gold. And you want to just throw it out there to people who aren't receptive. Now, with your friendship approach, you may be able to reach people. But as soon as they understand what you are saying, you're probably going to lose your audience. And at some point, it will have to also be what Jesus had said to his apostles when they were on their mission. You know, they went out two by two. He said, if they don't receive you in the city, shake the dust of your sandals off your feet and move on to the next one. So you'll know if your message is being received. You'll know if you're being effective. If you're not, move on to a different idea or a different venue. Just
good advice from the big guy, huh?
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
The 2x2 is also in Matthew.
I can give you the definite specifics. I think two or three of the Gospels where they were sent out on these missions and his, but I'll go ahead and I can put, if you're going to be around for just a second, I can go ahead and put it in the chat.
Sure. I can hang.
Okay. You can hang.
All right. Well, that's good. That's good to hear. In regards to politics, I don't get involved in politics at all. And I have no interest in it at all. I mean, it's been so corrupted. Everything's been corrupted.
Yeah.
It's so bad that You know, since Henry, you're a sports guy, I'll just show you how corrupted it is, okay? Because, you know, everybody used to think sports is right on up and up, you know? Well, yeah. It's not as honest up and as you might think, okay?
So, right, Diana.
The Boston Celtics, okay, are playing the Mavericks, Dallas Mavericks. Now, Boston won the first three games, 1, 2, 3, okay? They wiped them, okay? They wiped the Mavericks, okay? Oh, so now they play the fourth game, and they went to Dallas, and they played in Dallas, and Boston got their ass kicked. Now, do you really think Boston got beat in that situation? I don't think so. I think they just threw the game, okay? It's simple. Because think about all the money that's involved here.
Yeah.
Now you have a fifth game, right? I guess it's, they played four now. You have another one. And it's got to go back up to Boston. Look at all the money that's going to be made here, because this is going to be the final game, maybe. All the advertising that's going to come in, they get like $500,000 to $1 million every 30-second commercial. I mean, that's what I used to know it as. Maybe it's more now. I don't even know. But sports is so corrupt, because I'm just saying to myself, if the Celtics blew these guys off three games in a row and just smashed them down, and then the fourth game they lose, they get their ass kicked in the fourth game. Oh, so just look at what's going on here, because there's a lot of money. You're talking, by them losing that game, someone made billions of dollars, billions and billions of dollars. That's why I don't trust sports. I won't watch sports anymore. I don't trust them at all. It's horrible.
Yeah, Diana used to be a fan, so she's been following along, and she really gave up on it.
Well, I guess
like anything else, you got the cheaters and the losers, right? It's too bad, because there is some intrinsic value in sport, you know, but to pay people these millions of dollars to play a game is just beyond me. And I know that here in Ann Arbor, where you're supposed to hate the owners and love the players, you know, I mean, I just, you know, I'm kind of, I pox on both their houses, I think, because, you know, I mean, I used to play basketball. I used to play softball. I used to, you know, I tried real hard, you know, and
you didn't cheat.
I didn't cheat. And
the game wasn't fixed, as far as
I don't cheat at golf. I regularly lose money at golf, but, but I always have a good time. And I think that's what you need to do in between these things, because I've been doing my thing for 20 years. You know, you just can't do it 24/7. You know, I don't think you can. And, you know, I know people like Michael Hoffman, E. Michael Jones. These guys are cranking out. Who's the other the Jewish Ron Ons? I mean, he writes these 8,000, 9,000 word articles and stuff like that. I said, Ron, I can't read that stuff. It's going to take me all day to read it. I'm not that good a reader, you know. Yeah. But anyhow, these are the things we fight for. And I think, you know, I did want to say, though, that I worked the polls, not so much because I thought that the election was an important thing, but to show my enemies here in town that I was an upright citizen, you know, and which owner isn't from the tribe? It's just a cynical thing. If I'm working for something, I should be working for it, not just to expose. And I get to see the ex-councilwoman Joan Lowenstein at the vote counting, you know, and I know my appearance in a venue like that just pisses her off, but that's just not worth the buck, I don't think. Yeah. The bang ain't there.
Well, you do have to reevaluate, and maybe I sent you the verse. It's mainly Matthew 14. It's just, that's about the mission that he sent out. And then so I think you'll be able to glean what I was saying in that regard. But the point is, using your time and energy and efforts in a more productive way, just however that might be for you. You know that. So
yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right.
Cut out the fluff.
And we do what we do, and we'll do it as long as we can, as hard as we can.
That's right.
That's the motto. All right, guys. It's been
okay, Harry. Thanks for coming on. And hopefully we'll see you at the council meeting next week.
All right. We'll do the best we can.
Look forward to it.
All right. Take care.
Bye, Henry.
Okay. So there you go. We're coming up to the top of the hour. Do we have anybody else in the queue? I know someone said they wanted to talk about something.
That's probably true.
Well, no, I saw somebody. I can't see what's in there. Hold on.
I don't know. Diana knows who's in there. Oh, Always Honest. Yeah, she was saying that we were breaking up. I thought I didn't hear any of that on anybody who was talking.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
So, okay. We covered that. Good. It's good to see Henry is still kicking.
Yeah.
Henry, he likes the sports. He's into the sports stuff. I am not. And I played all sports, folks.
Yeah, you did.
And, I got my wounds to show for it.
Yeah, you know? Affected me.
Oh no! I mean, it's honestly, if I had a kid today, I mean, a kid, you know, 40 years ago, I would have definitely not encouraged them to play sports,
especially football.
I would have encouraged them if they wanted to play a sport. I'd say play a sport that you're not going to get your head beat in. Okay.
So hockey is out.
Well, I'm just saying. Well, no, I mean, actually, hockey. I thought hockey was great.
You guys were great in that, yeah.
Well, no, but see, the thing with hockey is when you get hit in hockey. I mean, they're too rough today how they play.
But you're padded.
You're padded, and plus, when you fall, you're on ice. You slide. You're not falling on the ground, hitting your head, and it bounces up. You know what I'm saying? So it's a whole different thing. But no, sports today is too violent. I mean, hockey. Yeah. I don't even know why they allow these guys to fight. If I was running the show with the hockey, if they fought any time they had a fight, they'd be kicked out of the game. I'd just kick them right out. I say if you're gonna have a big fight, you're out of the game. I don't care.
You'd have to be high up on the hierarchy to enforce that, because that's where the big bucks come in. People go looking. It's like a the games type of thing.
That's the whole point.
Yeah,
the whole point is. This is the bread and circus.
Yeah,
it's so different than the Romans. People go to football games because they want to see someone get creamed.
Yeah.
Okay, they go to hockey games that you want to see big fights.
Fights.
Of course, baseball is kind of sublime. It's just
you can sleep through that. That and golf.
Basketball could get rough. Basketball, I've seen it get rough.
Yeah, okay. My son was playing once, and he got, I don't know, clipped or, I don't know, I came out of the seat. I was going out onto the court to right that wrong. But I was in the middle of the bleachers, so I couldn't get over there. But, boy.
You were about to commit a foul yourself.
You want to see a foul? You do not want to mess with me. So, but anyway, when they go by, it would be my high school type. When they go by, I mean, they're going so fast that it's so if they get somewhat clipped, it's going to be spinning off into the wall somewhere. So anyway, and in regard to just as what Jim was saying, my grandson was playing football and he had the skills, really did, but he got some head injuries, and that is real prevalent regardless of the helmets. It like Jim says, it's just too rough.
Yeah, I mean, you got to understand, when I played football, I mean, I was only like 5'4", okay? I mean,
Both you and Joe, yeah.
We're just teeny little guys, okay? We got guys 6 feet,
two refrigerators.
And the only reason why Joe and I did so well, I mean, we actually were good football players, but we would have never made it anywhere because we're too small, okay? But see, when we were on the field, we were actually running for our lives.
So you were fast. That was your
and so
high point.
See, we were so small that, and we were both, Joe and I were both halfbacks, okay? They couldn't see us coming through the line. They couldn't see us because we were too small. and then when we ran, we were very fast. And we're like little bullets. They couldn't catch us. But again, we were running for our lives, because when you have a 200 or 300 pound guy in front of you and he's gonna grab you. I mean, there's no way I'm going through a 250 pound person. I mean, a little guy like me couldn't be up on one hand.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so, yeah, we were running for our lives. It was like, I got to get the hell out of here. I'm going to get pounced on.
With you. Yeah.
And so that's why, you know, we did pretty good at football until we both got hurt in football. What are you going to do? You know?
Yeah. Well, that'd be us now. That would be us now. The cartoon, if I ever have to run for my life, it's not going to end well. It's really kind of grossly overweight dog. I said, well, that's us now. I mean, we're older and everything creaks and groans and our joints don't work like they should. I can run pretty well if I'm pushing a grocery cart. But
well, you know what the thing would happen with me in sports? I saw how corrupt it was with the coaches and favoritism and how they would favor. Like, they didn't like guys like Joe and I because we're small. They like big guys. They like big guys that can – they run through the line and everybody
jumps. Wow, everyone, yeah.
You know, that wasn't how Joe and I worked. You know, we ran around everybody. We got the hell away from everybody. They didn't like that. They wanted us, you know, they wanted us to go right into the
right
wall.
Right at the center, yeah.
And it's like, no, I'm not going into the wall, you know. I mean, it was just really corrupt. I'll give you one instance of what happened with me one time because they didn't really care for us. So anyway, I'd be on kickoff returns. Okay. So I got in to do the kickoff return and I ran it back for a touchdown. All right. So there you go. Okay.
Yeah.
and now remember, I'm a halfback. I should be playing as a halfback with the rest of the guys. Right. But that's all he had me on was kickoff returns. I scored the only touchdown and he didn't allow me to play the rest of the game.
That'll teach you, huh?
No, but can you imagine? It's like, wait a second. I scored the only touchdown.
Yeah.
You're not putting me in to play halfback because you want to put all your big guys in, and they didn't do anything. They didn't score any touchdowns, and yet I get taken out, and I scored the only touchdown. And I just said, this is so corrupt.
Yeah.
I mean, really, when I saw how they dealt with things and who they put in, and if they, you know, these fathers would, you know, bitch and moan about getting their sons in there and. You know, it's very political, and same with the hockey. Yeah, it was very sucky. And that's why when I left sports, I says, I'm done with sports. I mean, you know, I watched sports later. Maybe I watched the Bruins or something, you know, a little bit. But then I got to the point, I got out of completely all sports. I wanted nothing to do with sports.
Not before your knee. You hurt your knees, though, right?
Well, I hurt my knee, yeah. I got torn cartilage in my knee, and I couldn't play football anymore. But I did play hockey, believe it or not, I played hockey. Okay, well, that brings us up to the top of the hour, and we're going to do a quick commercial, and we'll bring some other people in. They can talk at that next half hour. But anyway, we're going to get to Speak Free Radio, who sponsors us. We do appreciate that we have a place that we can be every Saturday night and talk to people and get other people to talk with us, and we appreciate that. Thank you, Dave, and everybody there. And if you people out there want to listen to some good information, just get on the Speak Free Radio anytime, and you can hear whoever they got on at the time. And then, of course, the next thing we talk about are the books, Money Tree Publishing. And here's where you get the books, the best books out there.
And DVD series.
And DVDs. I mean, this is, you know, if people say to me, what's the best stuff to get to watch or read or whatever, here they are right here. Again, the 6 Million Fact of Fiction. And Amid the German Villainy, the two books that you really have to have in your arsenal of books if you really want to understand, you know, what happened, with World War One, World War Two, in Germany and all that, and the Holocaust too, and of course the 6 million fact of fiction we're covering now. Great books, great information, and reasonably priced. And it's, you're supporting people that are people like us. Okay, remember that. These are the people you want to support. So anyway, I probably got 5 or 6 of these books right now. I lost a lot of my collection of books, but that's the way it goes. But I do have the Holocaust handbooks right in front of me over here. Mm-hmm. All Joe bought those. They cost him like $1,200. Hardback version of them. But I have all those, and these are plenty of the books that I have.
Oh yeah.
So anyway, that's that. Okay, so we are at the top of the hour. We're going to the last hour. Hopefully, if people want to call in, they're welcome to call in. We'd like to hear from you.
Or come in.
And we have somebody here that wanted to talk, always honest. Why don't we bring him in and let's see what he has to say.
She.
Okay.
Is she there?
I'm here.
Okay, good.
Good evening, always honest.
Hi, how's everybody doing?
Good, thank you.
So I wanted to ask, first of all, did you have your heart surgery already?
No.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, you sound remarkably well.
Well, you know, a person that's half dead, yeah, I suppose.
You have good spirits. That's a good thing.
Well, that's the only thing. What are you going to do? You got to just go. You know, I look at it this way. Whatever happens to me, I'm going to go right down to the end doing what I should be doing. So that's how I can do it. That's all I can do. You know?
We're waiting for them to get back with having aligned the experts for this particular surgery. And so I didn't expect, I thought I'd hear something. We'd hear something this week, but maybe next week.
Do you have to pay for the surgery since the first one failed? Do they just do it for free this time?
They should be giving us a rebate.
Well, look, I got insurance. My insurance covers everything, and sure. I'm not worried about it. But I'm not happy about it. But it is what it is. You know?
That's why we have insurance for situations like this, where you don't want to dip into your savings account for a major surgery.
Old people insurance.
Old people insurance. That's Medicare.
That's what we have. Medicare.
Yeah.
Whatever the hell it is.
Okay. We're all getting there, and we're all going to be old or already.
Well, that beats the alternative, but yeah, that's where nobody's getting out of this life alive. That's for sure.
That's so true. So, you know, I heard something really interesting that you guys might find funny. And just a quick comment about E. Michael Jones. I think it's amazing that he does this whole thing, expose, and then his final conclusion is forgive and love. Like, okay, because that's what they would do. Then to move on from that, the news about the Vatican is that they put out a special request to the IDF that they are willing to adopt 200 Palestinian refugee children, but they must, one of the prerequisites is that they have absolutely no parents or family of any kind, and that they have to be of toddler age. They already have 60 that have been delivered by the kidnappers themselves.
Wow. There's a lot of questions about that.
That sounds a little weird.
Yeah. You like that one?
It's a bit too specific. We're talking child marketing in some ways. Trafficking.
Wow. Yes. Goodness. Special request. But I did have
something.
That's
what comes to mind here.
I agree, Diana. I'm not sure who said that, but yes, I completely agree. Because I think they have killed off most of the adults.
I also heard something coming out of Palestine, a reporter from there that's being kind of hunted down, and she reports every now and then, and she's saying that the death toll has been updated to 200,000.
Well, I didn't know they had that many there. But
where's this? Where's
Gaza? Gaza?
Yeah.
In Gaza, yeah.
Let me tell you how I feel about Gaza. I don't believe anything that's coming out of Gaza. Nothing.
Because the Israelis control the media, so we don't know what's going on.
Would you say 200,000 people? Really? 200,000?
That's a minimum. I think it's much more. I think it's closer to 1 million because they're not even discussing the people under the rubble.
Well, do you believe that yourself?
I know that they're bombing indiscriminately, and when an entire building, so in Gaza and Palestine, when you have a building that's a 3- and 4-story building, that's not 4 or 5 different, you know, families or people living there. That's one family that's 6, 7 generations, 5 generations, whatever is alive there, right? They all live in that building.
Well, here's the only problem. The bombers' buildings are empty. That's what they're bombing.
Or it may not be Gaza, maybe Syria.
Here's what I think is going on there, and I don't even like getting it. I don't like getting involved with Gaza or the Ukraine. First of all, the Ukraine is just a money laundering operation. Gaza is another money laundering operation. That's all it is. So now, that whole area in Gaza, they keep showing you everything's bombed. It's been bombed. Okay, we're not saying it hasn't been bombed, but those people are out of there. What they're bombing is just bombing empty buildings. Those people are not, to me, this is how I feel about it. I'm not saying no one's dying, but I'm just saying the majority of those people are out of those buildings, and they're bombing empty buildings. That's my opinion.
Well, I think, to me, because of the rabid mental psychopathic behavior of the Israelis, they have total control of the media. They've been coming after the Palestinians since their inception in 1948. I don't believe there are any Palestinians left. And whatever they're doing, they're staging with Israelis.
It's a movie.
Mm-hmm. That's
it's
right.
A big movie for our entertainment.
That's right. You got to look at what's going on there, and you might say to me, "Well, Jim, why? You know, this is going to make. Why would the Israelis be behind all this if it's going to make them look bad?"
It's very simple. At the top of the media list.
Let's think about it. If you're going to come after the Israelis, which this is what everybody's doing now, they're coming after the Israelis and saying how bad they are, they're murderers, the genociders, and this and that. Okay. So now that brings attention to Israel.
Yeah.
They're getting railed on. Mm-hmm. The Jews love that. Mm-hmm.
That's part of the whole plan.
That's right.
It's victimhood.
Yes.
It's victimhood. They mm-hmm. have to be the victims. So mm-hmm. if they're going to get blamed for this Gaza nonsense, then they just bring it in with the Holocaust. They're continuing on their victimhood. Everybody hates us. Everybody hates us because we're Jews. They're blaming us for doing all this stuff.
I think that's why they're allowing all of that really gruesome stuff. The actual headless baby.
I think they're staging it.
They want people to be mad and angry and hatred so that they fight.
That's right.
That's right.
This is all. All this makes Israel look good, even if it makes them look bad.
Yeah.
It's their biblical prophecy.
Well, Pike made the mention that World War III would be between the Muslims and the Israelis.
Israelis are backed by almost every country on the planet. The Muslims have no backing.
I have a theory about this. I do believe, do you remember when that Q thing was going around where they were saying, oh, Israel's going to be last, and Trump went around and 180 countries or whatever number it was capitulated to him? What they capitulated to is how we're moving forward with the one world government, the destruction of Gaza, the Muslim and Israeli war. Everything that's coming forward is what they have capitulated to. That's why all those SOBs and Arab leaders are just sitting on their keisters and doing nothing.
Well, it's going to be a little bit more complicated. Remember, Jesus said,
we're not
there yet. He said, you're going to hear of earthquakes in diverse places, wars and rumors of wars. And then he said, but the end is not yet. So there's mm-hmm. going to be a big process before the final 7 years. But again, there's a lot of hassling and we don't know exactly how this is all going to fit in. Not yet.
I have something promising. This is the only thing that I've seen that gave me a slight bit of hope. we can all see how the younger people, the younger generation, the 20-somethings are protesting. They're standing up. They obviously can see they have no futures. They can't buy anything. They can't feed themselves. So the only thing they can do is stand up at this point. So I was watching, and they had, what is his name, Anthony Blinken, was at a press conference, and it was being the gentleman that was posting it was a National Guard. And what Blinken was saying was that if they kept doing what they were going to be doing at the universities, that he was going to get the National Guard and basically sick them on him. So this young man who's in the National Guard says, look, I can't tell you personally, but I have an oath to the Constitution, and I understand what the Constitution means. And I'm going to read to you what the Constitution says our oath is. And basically he broke it down, and, you know, he read it out. And what he read was, look, yeah, we're here to protect the nation, but we're also here to protect the nation against people and foreign governments and foreign aggressors from our land. And we also are not going to uphold something that's against the Constitution because it's not a law. So, I mean, I really felt good about this 20-something National Guard saying, you know, basically, F them. We're not going to do what they tell us.
Good. That's good to hear. Some
people feel seriously. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So a little bit of good news.
Yeah, that's not too bad. Thank you. Yeah. I mean, it takes individuals. You're not going to get huge groups of people doing this. At least they're not going to be reported. But, and again, it's the individual, like Jim has talked about in regard to which you haven't gotten to yet, Jim, but you maybe could talk about the Catholics who are opposing the gay agenda, the sodomite agenda. It's not the church. It's the people in Toronto.
Of course. Thank you for allowing me some time. I appreciate it.
Thank you, man.
Thank you. I will bring up a point here about if people think that the Muslims are going to be fighting against the Jews.
Please understand something, right?
The Muslims are working with the Jews. Don't you get it? Because look at all the countries. Look at all the Muslims, all the dark-skinned people, mostly Muslims, that are going to all these countries. They're Muslims. All right?
Yeah.
Who do you think is sending them there? The Jews.
Yeah.
Don't you get it?
That's right.
They're not going to fight each other. They're working together. The Jews are using the Muslims to darken all the white countries. That's what the Jews are doing. They're using them to do this. They need each other. They got a symbiotic relationship. So the Jews are sitting back saying, any country that's white, we're coming in, and we're going to send our brothers in, which are the Muslims. Okay, so that's what's happening. All the countries are getting all darkened by the Muslims. Who's going in these countries? The Africans, all right, Muslims, a lot of Muslims, and, they're mostly Muslims that are coming into these countries.
Yeah.
I don't know anybody else. Think about it. Okay, I was talking to Diane about this the other day. I'm saying, you ever notice that, let's say there's a white, just say Norway, and we have Norway, a white country, and let's say they're taking in refugees, all right? Let's say you were a refugee in Israel, and you're white. You're a refugee in Africa. That's even better. You're a refugee in Africa, and you're white. And you say, I want to go to Norway. I'm a refugee. I'm a white refugee. Are they going to accept you?
Probably not.
They're not going to accept a white refugee.
Yeah.
They're going to accept anybody that's dark. So there's no diversity with the refugees. It's all one color. Okay, you don't have whites and this and that and Asians. And no, it's all brown people that are part of the refugee situation. And that's where we are today.
Yeah.
And people don't get it. The Muslims, they're getting back at us and they're laughing because, they've already come to the United States. They've taken over, I believe, Detroit. I think in Michigan they got someplace. I wish Henry was here. He could tell us. I know there's
Dearborn,
so they have taken over complete cities, Muslim people, okay? But nobody really knows about it. Nobody says anything about it. And if you are a Christian and you're in those cities, or you're a white person in those cities, forget about it. You're not going to survive because they're all Muslim. And now Italy is I mean, the Muslims are the Africans have come into Italy, and there are probably a lot of Muslims. And so Italy has been completely destroyed by these Muslims. And then, of course, the Europe countries. France and all these countries in Europe. Who's coming in? Muslims. They're all Muslims. You know, they're not Jews that are coming in. Okay? They're not whites. Nobody, not Asians. It's all Muslims.
Yeah.
Because there's a ton of Muslims in the world. Muslims got to be the biggest population out there, other than maybe Indians. I mean, the India.
Well, they'd be Hindu more.
Yeah, Hindu right. people. But you don't see, for the most part, we do have people from India coming into the United States.
Yeah.
But those people there are rich people.
Yeah.
Well, they have money. Okay. Yeah, they're coming. Right. They're not coming into the United States. They're coming here to invest and take over businesses and open up businesses
and do
all that type of stuff. That's what they're doing, all right? The Muslims might do it to a little bit, but most of the people coming in are poor. They're coming onto our systems so they can collect, get food, get this, get everything, you know, the freebies, and that's what they're doing. So, but like Asian people that come in the United States – the Asians, they're not poor.
Right.
They got money. Okay? People don't understand who's coming in and who's doing what. But it's really the Jews are using the brown nations to make the country browner.
Yep.
I mean, that's the whole point. Because the population, the whites are just not cutting it anymore. I mean, what do they say? By 2040, 45 or something? We're gonna be
minority. Whites minority. Are gonna be a minority, yeah.
Okay, so now when we're a minority now, are we gonna be able to claim refugee status in these countries?
Or special minority status, protected minority status?
No.
Probably not.
It's not gonna happen. So and another point I wanna make out, because a lot of people think that we're going to have a solution, that it's going to either go this way or that way, whatever way. See, I don't care about that. The only solution is you or me, okay? Do you know what's going on? Do you understand what's going on? You're not going to be able to solve the world's problems individually. You're not going to be able to do it. And even collectively, you're never going to get all the whites together to do this. It's not going to happen.
There's not going to be a resolution or solving anything.
It's not going to happen. For people to think, the whites can't even get together to do anything. All right? I mean, they're so divided with religion, they're divided with politics. It's just too divided. So you have to look at your life. Are you happy with your life? Okay, are you content knowing what's going on with all the corruption, all the problems? And as you look at the politic of everything, can you sit back and just say, I know it's not going to go anywhere. We're not going to solve our problems. Mm-hmm. But yet I'm happy knowing that. I'm happy knowing where I am in the scheme of things, that things are bad and we are not going to solve our problems. This is way beyond us.
What's interesting is that Monica repeated something that you used to say. We are doing, there are jobs that we can do, information we can convey. We are doing what we can while we can, as long as we can.
That's right.
And that's
I love it when people come on my BitChute channel, people come on the Hoaxbusters show, even here with Always Honest. That was nice for her to come on and talk and, you know.
Yeah.
That's what really I like. I like it being able to have an honest, outright discussion. Say whatever you want. Give us your opinions, and that's it. That's all you can do. You're not going to get somebody in there politically to represent your thoughts.
Oh my gosh,
it's not going to happen.
No,
you're not going to be able to do it yourself either, because there's no way in hell you're going to politically be able to climb the ladder. It's way beyond. We are just little people watching the movie, okay, we're watching the movie. And you're going to be sitting in the audience saying, you know, I know how it ends. I have a whole biblical viewpoint on how I look at things, and I'm not going to push it on you people here, whatever. I've talked about it before. But the point is, there is a plan. All right, God has a plan. That's my personal feelings. I think he has a plan. Mm-hmm. He knows what he's doing. He's gonna come in when he sees that things are bad, and he already had the plan laid out. And that's what I feel. That's why I don't worry about it. It's like, you're just giving up. You're not trying to do this or do that. What do you want me to do?
Henry is discovering now that the political process. Is hopeless, and he's bailing. And I remind him, said, Henry, we have limited time. Apply your skills and energies to things that you believe or will help you, and do what do the things that you want to accomplish. If it doesn't look like it's going to work, like Jesus says, move on to the next city, the next project, you know, or you just continue. I think that attempting to reach Jews, particularly in a whatever venue he has, unless he's a really good friend with them, don't get him in a group. That's hopeless. Seriously. Shake the dust off your shoes, off your feet, and move on.
Well, I mean, you know, if you want to think you're going to get through the Jews, fine. I think it's a tough road to hoe.
It should be one-to-one. Don't do it in a group.
Jews, you got to understand, they've been brainwashed too, okay? They've been sold a bill of goods on the Holocaust.
Yep.
They've been sold a bill of goods about them being a special group of people that, you know, whatever. God's chosen.
Terminal victims.
You know, yep. Yeah. Yep. You know, they love this victimhood bullshit. And so it's hard to get through to people like that. So what you want to do is try to appeal to people like yourself.
Yeah.
You know, people that kind of like see what's going on, but they're not so hard-headed that, for instance, like E. Michael Jones, he's, you know, completely, you know, he's never going to admit the Catholic Church is wrong. He's never going to admit something's going wrong there, all right? I mean, how do you deal with people like that? You want people to say, wait a second, your viewpoint here is out the lunch here. I mean, this isn't rational. If you think everybody's going to become Catholic and the world's going to be a better place, we're all going to sing Kumbaya. I mean, it's not going to happen, folks.
They even complain about Ireland. I've heard Gemma and E. Michael Jones complain about the failure, and we even presented this to her, the failure of the church to support her. And they, you know, they're not doing this.
I talked about this, I think, maybe yesterday's Walk and Talk or whatever. How do you belong to an organization, whether it's religious, whether it's political or economical, whatever organization you believe in, okay? Yeah. How do you believe in an organization that supports nonsense, okay? Like, say you're Catholic, you're a good Catholic, you go to Catholic Church and you love everything, you go to Mass and you love it all, everything's great. But how do you support a church, okay? Remember, the Vatican is your mother organization. How do you support your mother organization when your mother organization supports gayness, okay, gay pride, when they support, these type of things? Yeah, they might be against abortion.
Maybe.
But are they really against abortion? Yeah. You see, everybody puts on a good show and they give you a good talk on what you want them to believe, or you think they believe, or they want you to believe the belief, okay? You know, they're not. So these organizations that people belong to, they support things that are really bad.
One of the things is that E. Michael Jones has promoted this or mentioned this. 150, maybe 160 Jewish organizations believe it's their fundamental religious right to have abortions. Why is the Catholic Church not saying that ain't right? Nobody's standing up against, except E. Michael Jones has. He has stood up against. But that means, which we have talked about, are individuals. If you wanted to talk about the Toronto thing with the Catholic Church, the Catholics in Toronto.
Yeah, I put a 10-minute video on here.
Yeah.
And it was this fellow that, I think he did a good job. It was a Catholic school, actually. And the Catholic school, they wanted to fly the gay pride flag.
Yeah.
And the Catholic people, I was happy to hear this, that the Catholic people said no.
They voted it down.
They said this is against Catholic principles. I mean, that's good to see that Catholics said they have principles. Okay, they voted it down. Okay, fine. And so the guy goes, you know, he's talking to a Catholic guy in the school, and he goes, you know, to the back. The guy brings him to the back of the school or whatever. And there's a gay pride flag.
In the corner of some place.
On a pedestal, you know, hanging there on a pedestal. And he's saying, well, yeah, okay, so you don't want to fly it out outside there on the big pole.
In front of everything.
But you have the flag inside here. Why would a Catholic school have a gay flag pride flag in a Catholic school that just said no to the gay pride flag hanging?
Yeah. From the main pole, yeah.
In the main pole flapping in the breeze. Because they're hypocrites. That's why the Catholic people and the people that run these schools are hypocrites.
So what are they doing? What are they doing about this? Are being taken task? Are they taking it down? We don't know yet, do we?
Well, it's not taking it down. It's on one of those poles. You know what I mean? It's inside the school.
Inside the school, but still, that's the same thing, isn't it?
Well, no, but the point is the guy didn't want to talk about it. Okay? He's a Catholic. See, what happens is when you push them, okay, to the wall to show them that they're hypocrites, then they don't want to talk to you anymore. They just say, oh, okay, thank you. Thank you for coming by to talk to us.
Yeah. You know what I
mean? That's just stupid. So I would love to see more, you know, people of a religious faith stand up to the gays, you know, stand up to what's going on here. I would love to see that, but they don't do it. And if they do it, then their mother organization, like let's say the Catholics, and they got the mother organization, the Vatican. The Vatican that's supposed to be the successor of Christ, right, the popes. These guys are just charlatans. They're just playing games with your word games, making it look like they're doing something, doing you a favor. They're not doing you a favor. These people are bad people.
They're doing themselves a favor.
Yeah,
they're bad people. Oh, but see, E. Michael Jones, you'll ever notice, he'll never come against the Vatican because the Vatican is his mother. He, even if his mother's doing something wrong, he'll criticize certain things here and there, but he's really not going to criticize his mother because his mother is his mother. And he feels that I can't get away from my mother.
It's the mothership. Yeah.
Yeah, so there's your problem. People, they feel they have to obey whoever is above them, no matter what they say. Whatever they say, I got to obey them. Even if it's wrong, they obey them.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, I used to have this viewpoint when I was a Jehovah's Witness. they taught the mother organization, God's organization, were the witnesses. And they had these 12 men or whatever the hell they were, how many there were. They were ruled in Bethel, house of God. That's what Bethel means, house of God. These men were in the house of God, and they ruled, and they made all the decisions for all the people below them. Whatever they said goes. You know, they claimed they weren't inspired by God. They weren't inspired, but everything they wrote in the Watchtower and Awake magazines, you had to do what it said, but they're not inspired, you see?
It sounds like the precursor to the Noahide laws, you know, that they're trying to establish, basically.
They want
to set up a council of people that you have to obey when they make rules.
Right. This is how everything runs. Everything runs from the top down, and people belong to either a religion, some sort of political organization. Maybe you belong to some, you know, Greenpeace environmental organization that you want to believe in, libertarian type of view organization. Everybody has to belong to something. And that something is the mother. and they're part of that mother organization that makes the decisions for them. Even if they make wrong decisions, they still go along with it because it's the mama. They can't come against it. Well, let me tell you, when you come against it, folks, you're going to be looking from the outside in.
That's right.
Okay, just let you know. If you have the balls to come against them and say, I don't buy it. And that's why E. Michael Jones and Gemma and these super Catholics, I call them super Catholics, if they had the balls, you know what they would do? They would say, I'm done with you, Vatican, popes, all you people that are making decisions for me, because I don't believe what you're saying. But they don't. They actually believe that these people were put in office because they're following God. They're part of God. Crazy. You know? What's SD for sure?
I don't know. Super Catholic. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Well, then you get the Super Catholic and the Super Jews like Moskowitz and
Jones. That's right. You got Super Jews. Okay. Yep. Charles Moskowitz is a Super Jew. He's never, ever going to admit his Jewish organization is wrong. They're going to be right till the day is long. Okay.
Yeah, that's right.
Whatever they do, you know, Gaza, whatever, you know, this goes on and on. Holocaust. Yeah. We're victims. Okay,
Yeah,
you know, Hitler wanted to kill all the Jews. The Jews were put in the camps because they were Jews. Okay? Yeah. E. Michael Jones, the same thing. Oh, the Catholics were put in the camps because they were Catholic. No, Michael. The Catholics were put in the camps because they were bad Catholics.
They were dissidents.
Okay? They were bad. Yes, they were bad. Okay? So, I don't know. People just don't see it. I mean, again, you could agree with me. I don't even give a crap who agrees with me. You know, it comes to the point. It's just I just state facts. If you don't want to agree with the facts, I don't know what to tell you. You show me some other facts. You show me why I gotta believe a pope, or I gotta believe the president, or I gotta believe some economic forum guy that's talking about climate change. Or this or that bullshit that's happening. Why do I have to believe these guys? I don't believe any of them. You got to believe in the medical profession that, you know, everything they're doing is for the best of you. And you know, take this, take that pill, and you're going to be all set. Call me in the morning.
Right.
I don't know. If that's what you want to believe,
or so-called pseudo-medical professions like the CDC organizations that supposedly – follow the science, and the science is so corrupted and so outrageously wrong. And Fauci is trying to get off of having promoted this. And
I am the science. You need to obey me and don't question
much. Yeah, don't question. Just do it. In fact, one of the first questions that Jim's doctor asked me when he walked in the room was, "How do you put up with this guy?" I just told him. I said he was answered prayer.
Well, no, the thing is, maybe that's the reason why the doctors haven't gotten back to me. Maybe they want me dead. They want to see how long I can last. How long I'm going to last.
It's before you cry uncle.
You know, they'll get back to me 2 years from now or whatever.
Are you still alive?
Yeah. Yeah, but again, good. I'm glad you brought Trump up because, see, what a deal this guy's got. Yeah. He is the biggest crook. He's responsible for the deaths of probably millions of people.
As a result of war.
He's got everybody fooled with the COVID bullshit and with the vax bullshit. And now he's a Jew bullshitter. You know, he wants to support those Jews.
Yeah.
I don't know how people don't see through this. Oh, Trump made American great again. He's going to make American great. He's going to get his back on track. Look, I'm not saying he's not going to do it. But he's not going to do it for you or me. He's not going to represent you or me.
That's right.
Okay?
For us.
You know, he's not going to be for us.
Yep.
He's going to be for everybody else.
She going to play that?
Well, yeah, if you want. It's only a minute, 2 minutes. Go ahead.
If she
can. Anti-Semitic attack is an assault on all of us. It's an assault on humanity. It will require all of us working together to extract the hateful poison of anti-Semitism from our world. This was an anti-Semitic attack at its worst. the scourge of anti-Semitism cannot be ignored, cannot be tolerated, and it cannot be allowed to continue. We can't allow it to continue.
Really?
It must be confronted and condemned everywhere. It rears its very ugly head. We must stand with our Jewish brothers and sisters to defeat anti-Semitism and vanquish the forces of hate. That's what it is. Through the centuries, the Jews have endured terrible persecution, and you know that. We've all read it. We've studied it. They've gone through a lot. And those seeking their destruction, we will seek their destruction.
Well, that's not very tolerant.
And when you have crimes like this,
crimes,
whether it's this one or another group, we have to bring back the death penalty.
They have to pay the ultimate price. Goodness.
They have to pay the ultimate price. They can't.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
They can't do this to our country. We must draw a line in the sand and say very strongly, never again.
Now think about that.
That does sound like the Noahide law.
No, you think about what he just said.
Yeah.
I mean, really? And people are gonna vote for this guy?
Yeah.
I mean, what are you people out of your mind?
Mm-hmm.
I mean you can't say anything bad about a Jew unless you're gonna get shot or killed or put in jail or whatever. I mean, this is what this guy's saying. And he's got all these people fooled. At the end, oh well, Trump, you know, he's gonna do it. He's gonna get in there and he's gonna turn everything around. He's gonna make everything look good, and you know, oh my goodness gracious!
Like you said, won't be for us.
No, he's completely against us. He might be good with the other people, you know, because they're all supporting him because they love the Jews. You know, the people that love the Jews, you know, all the Zionists out there are gonna love the Jews, and you know, remember, there's more. There's more non-Jewish Zionists in the world than there are Zionist Jews.
Yeah, that's true.
There's probably 30 to 50 million Zionists. You know, they're not Jews. They're non-Jew Zionists.
Right.
Christians.
The Judeo-Christians, right.
The Jews don't have to worry about it because they got all the Christians, these Zionist Christians on the side.
Yeah, doing their best, fighting for them. Yep.
That's right. They got all these knuckleheads all brainwashed.
Like Trump.
Nonsense.
Yep.
Yeah.
We have the death penalty for who are anti-Semitic.
Yeah, I mean, I just, you know, that video there should be put everywhere. Every truther person out there should be playing that video their program. At some point in time, and then just say to the people listening, do you really think Trump is good for us? I mean, really?
So much for freedom of speech.
Well, no, but you know what they're going to say? Well, he's better than Biden.
Well, Biden didn't say anything like that.
That's the point.
Yeah.
Okay? He's better than Biden. Well, a chimpanzee is better than Biden. I mean, come on, you don't tell us anything.
Is he running? Well, the thing is, Biden is, it's not going to make any difference. Trump may be the only one saying it, but it's going to be done. Not today, but eventually it's going to be done. These are the basis. They do the switch, the anti-Semitism, Noahide laws, back and forth and back and forth. So you're not going to be able to tell the difference between one or the other.
Yeah.
The penalty is the same.
Yeah. So again, getting back to, as long as you understand what's going on, then that's your paradise. You as a person sitting at home knowing when you watch all this garbage that everything's garbage, right? You can't do anything about it. You know, my friend Ray, he made a comment the other day about me. I made it because I was talking about the gays. And he thought I was a little
easy,
too easy on the gays. And I said, Ray, you gotta understand something here about the gays. I can't stop people from being gay. I can't stop these sodomites from doing all the sexual perversions that they're doing. I have to accept them. What do you want me to do, kill them? I'm not going to kill them, but I have to accept them. All right, when I say I have no problem with them, well, I mean, there's nothing I can do. What do you want me to do? I can't stop them from being gay. But if you're going to ask me how I feel about them, I'll tell you that I feel they're sodomites. And they're going to come to the same end that the, you know, sodomites back in the Bible days, what happened to them with Sodom and Gomorrah. I mean, that's all I can say. I mean, I'm not, you know, too easy on them at all.
Right.
I come against them. I expose them. I show you that these people, they're not the best people here. You know, but I mean, they might be nice people. If I have someone move next door to me and they're gay or whatever, I'll be nice to them and I'll be courteous. And if they need a hand doing something, I will help them. I will never, ever not be nice to somebody that I don't like. Right. I will always be nice to them. But if you're going to ask me how I feel about them and their lifestyle, I'm going to tell you I don't agree with it. But that's all I can do. I can't stop them from whatever they believe, their system of belief. I can't stop them, but I'll tell you how I feel about it, you know. Do we have anybody else coming in our discussion?
I don't get Always Honest. Anything else?
No. I mean, I don't want to take up all the talking.
Well, Reese is here finally.
Oh, Reese is here. Reese, what's going on? Can you hear us?
Yep. Yeah, good point.
You can hear us.
Yeah, well, I can hear us.
Reese is. Mike connection.
Hey, Reese.
Okay.
Reese. Are we clear? We're clear now. Hey, yeah, good evening, everybody.
Hi, Reese.
I think that's Uncle Henry over there. I don't see anybody. Let me get off the chat here for a second so I can see who's there. Oh, and there's Jim Rizzoli.
Still there.
Back from the dead.
Yeah, well, that's. I'm still
quite visited.
I'm still living, and. Well, we'll see how that goes.
Rumors of my death have been grossly exaggerated, as they
That's
say.
That's right.
As
That's
Mark
right.
Twain says, yes.
Yeah.
Well, Jim, I hope I don't rattle your cage, but because you had kind of a brush with death, I have to ask you a question. Because I know you've had, unfortunately, you've been exposed to this Jehovah's Witnesses, as I had in the past. Long, long behind me. I'm not affected in any way by that mindset. But you're not still drifting around in Jehovah land, are you?
No. I've been out of the witnesses since 1994, technically, you know.
1996, officially.
Well, being that I'm somebody who actually did a broadcast for 10 years, part of which was addressing Jehovah's Witnesses, what I've found is most of them, and I used to say it often, I say most of you have never left the Jehovah's Witnesses. You've just stopped attending their meetings.
Yeah.
In other words, they're still, I used to call it being stuck in Jehovah land. They're still stuck in the Witnesses. They still think, you know, Christmas is a pagan celebration that was Sol Invictus, you know, Saturnalia, and all this other nonsense that came out of the Two Babylons by Alexander Hislop. But anyway, we won't go into that right now. But it's important because, you know, at some point in our life, we have to say to ourselves, before we leave this earth, have we bent our knee to Jesus Christ? Do we acknowledge him? And that's, you know, what I would appeal to you that, you know, I mean, I'm hoping you're not still stuck in that, as I call it, Jehovah land, where, you know, the Witnesses have this completely unscriptural idea about Christ. But you've put that all behind you, I take it.
Yeah, I would imagine. But there, look at, but I got to give them credit. Broken clock is, you know, right twice a day. Christmas is pagan. I don't get involved with Christmas. Okay?
Wait a minute. Christmas is pagan. I have writings from the 4th century that the Christians were celebrating Christmas, the Eastern Orthodox, on January 6th, and the Christians were celebrating on December 25th. Do you know where that December 25th date comes from?
Yeah, but you already buried yourself by saying what century.
Why?
The first century Christians didn't celebrate any of that stuff.
Well, the 3rd and 4th century did.
Why, the 3rd and 4th century, that's where it all went wrong.
Wait a minute. What you're saying then is that Jesus Christ abandoned his church after the first century and he never fulfilled the Great Commission that he promised he would?
Well, let's stick to one question at a time. Is Christmas pagan or not?
It's not pagan.
Was Jesus born December 25th?
Yes.
No, he wasn't.
It's provable.
Okay, you give me your proof. I'll give you my proof.
First of all, let's dispel the myth that December 25th was a Saturnalia. See, most people never fact-checked. The same way they were taken in by Zachariah Sitchin with the Anunnaki nonsense, which Dr. Michael Heiser
okay, so you believe debunked. Let me just get this straight. When do you believe Jesus was born?
December 25th. And okay, you know what that's based on? Hold on. There's a basis for that. You never looked into it because you accepted December 25th was chosen because it was the Saturnalia. But, Jim,
forget about the Saturnalia. I'm going to show you when Jesus was born.
No. I'm
going to prove it. I'm going to prove it right now. I'm going to prove it, right? Very simple. When did Jesus die?
On March 14th, I believe it was.
Okay. How old was he?
33.
Say 30, he was about 33 and a half, okay? Okay, so.
Okay.
What month did you say it was?
March.
Well, according, yeah.
Okay,
according
just tell me. Give me
the
month you just. Okay,
it was just the month of March. The date, okay. I don't want to give you the.
Okay, fine. March. He was, okay, I'm going to simplify this. When did Jesus die? He died in the spring, right? You agree with that, right? March, April, right?
In March, yes.
Okay, he was 33 and a half, right?
Yes.
Okay, when would he be 34?
Well, listen,
let's just forget about the Saturnalia. Let's forget about everything else. We know when he died.
December, it would have been in December.
No. Hold on here. We know he was 33 and a half. We know this when he died. Let's say it was March. Okay? March, 33 and a half. When would he be 34? March, April, May, June, July, August, September. When was Jesus born? September, October, thereabouts.
No, Jim, right from Scripture, we know when he was born. You know how?
I just told you when he was born.
But you're pontificating. You're not giving me any evidence.
No, I just gave you. He was 33 and a half when he died.
Jim,
he died in, I say, March,
yeah,
April.
But you're speaking in generalities. I'm going to give you specifics.
That's not general, Aaron.
You're saying because he was around 33 and a half when he died, we could establish his birth date, which is not factual. In other words,
Months later.
All right, look, we could put all the speculation to rest. You know how?
All righty, tell me.
Because we know what was the difference between John the Baptist and Jesus' birth. How many months apart was it?
6 months.
Okay, we know the date of Mary's conception based on Elizabeth's conception of John.
That's
right. Okay, from that date, which can be verified, I have worked out the dates, not just myself, but scholars that have actually found, you know, they've verified these dates. We can come up with the date of Jesus' birth being on December 25th based on the conception of Elizabeth and then Mary. Based on what it says in Scripture, the 9 months would have led to December 25th. That's why the church chose that date in the 4th century.
No, that's not true at all. That's not true at all.
It's not?
Mary, as far as I understand, okay, Mary conceived Christ, okay, in December. That's when she got pregnant, in December. So let's just take it. December, January, February, March, April, May, June, July, August, September. There you go. Jim, let me ask you something.
Let's not argue about the date right now.
I know when I have the date right.
All right, hold on. Here's what you're missing, though. You're missing a much bigger point.
Missing nonsense. Jesus was not born in December 25th.
Hold on. Referring to the celebration of the most important birth in the annals of human history is not nonsense. That birth should be celebrated as it is by Christians today. Now, if you want to celebrate it, celebrate it.
I don't celebrate Christendom.
All Christians celebrate it.
Okay, Reese, hold on.
They need to celebrate it correctly. Right now, it's a merchandising day. That's all it is.
Right.
That's a point.
But you know what? Not to Christians that celebrate it in the spirit of Christ. We don't celebrate it as a merchandising day. But I understand you've got a good point. That's what it's been turned into. But here's what happened. I'm going to tell you what happened. This is where the December 25th Saturnalia nonsense came from. It started in the 12th century by a guy named Bar. It was a Jew that came up with it. Bariza, I think his name was. And then it reemerged in the 18th century. Until the 12th century, no one ever said that Christmas was the celebration of the Roman Saturnalia. First of all, the Roman Saturnalia was not celebrated on December 25th. It was a period starting around December 15th or 17th. It wasn't on the 25th. So what happened was, later on, they tried to pin that day to it because that was an attack on the Christian faith that started with the Two Babylons by Alexander Hislop. And I know Hislop was put up to it by his Masonic conspirators who began plotting against the church around that same period as Hislop came out with that book. He's from Scotland. And we know that John Robison was also from Scotland, from Edinburgh University, and he went public around the year 1800 that these Judeo Masonic collaborators were seeking out the brightest minds in Europe to be part of their worldwide revolution. So we know that the revolution was in progress. We have this guy also from Scotland, who no one knows anything about, that comes up with this book that tries to smear all of Christianity as nothing but a reinvention of paganism. But as you look into those claims that are made in the Two Babylons by Alexander Hislop, you're going to dismantle them, because you're going to find out, once you vet the claims, that what he was doing is that he was playing fast and loose with historical fact, with words that he translated from ancient languages, and a whole hodgepodge of hoodwinking the public into it. So my point is this, though. If Jesus Christ's birth was the focus of the entire Old Testament, the emergence, the appearance of the Messiah, that he would be the savior of mankind, God's sending his son to save us from our sins, what day would be more fitting to be celebrated than the birth of God's son, the Messiah, coming into this world? And that's what Christians did in the early centuries until now. Now, there may be also pagan festivals around that time, but you see, Christ overshadows all of that. Christ is so much greater than that, that Christians are not going to allow some pagan celebration that was celebrated in the similar season, you know, as Christmas was, to overshadow the greatest event in human history, the birth of Christ. And I'll tell you this, I could prove scripturally from scripture verses, not from speculation, not from my playing fast and loose with facts, that Jesus' birth was on December 25th.
Well, you haven't proven it. Well, no, you haven't. But here's the point.
I can.
Okay. Well, I can, that's though. I thought I dismantled it. But anyway, here's my point, okay? First century Christians, I'm talking right after Jesus died, those people there, the year 33, 40, 50-ish, they didn't celebrate the birth of Christ.
Wait a minute. You never read the Gospel of Luke chapter 2? Where Jesus was born, and a choir of angels appeared and was praising God, and the shepherds in the fields.
You just missed what I just said, Reese. First, listen, Reese, do your homework. Show me.
I have.
show me where first century Christians in the Bible celebrated the birth of Christ. They never celebrated the birth of Christ. You know what they did celebrate, though? What did he tell them to celebrate? He told them to celebrate.
Not his death.
Oh, no, he said.
No, they didn't celebrate his death.
Well, that's what he told them to celebrate.
He resurrected.
No. They celebrated the Last Supper.
Yeah.
They celebrated the Last Supper, not Jesus' death. That's what the Jehovah's Witnesses celebrate, because they're a satanic cult and they want to celebrate the murder of the Son of God. So they say we celebrate his death. We're celebrating the Passover feast that Jesus gave with his disciples before his death. We're not celebrating him being scourged by the Romans and nailed to a cross. We're celebrating the supper that he gave, where he announced, those of you who eat of my body and drink of my blood, symbolically, of course, that you will have life. In other words, you will be able to conquer death, and that even the terrible things you're going to suffer that they didn't know that they would suffer later, they're all been conquered in the crucifixion of Christ, in his death. All that was conquered. So that's what we celebrate. You're right. In a way, we celebrate his death, the crucifixion, but we don't celebrate it as a death. We celebrate it as Christ offering himself on the cross on our behalf willingly so that he could emancipate us from our sins.
It wouldn't have been successful. It would not have been successful except that he resurrected. We're just about out of time, by the way.
Yeah, okay, well, look at it. Brent, okay, we can talk about, Reese, we can talk about this maybe next week. All right? So we had a good time. We thank you, the people that called in.
Oh.
And we're going to end our show with this video here.
All right? With the Hulk's train.
All right. Hulk's train. So there you go. Megan will be our best. Tell all your friends you won't see the swimming pool. Oh. When the train arrives at the station, like the theater, it's been hidden from you. Going on the world, wake up. You're on a hoax train, a hoax train. Climb up the world, wake up. Get off the hoax train, the hoax train. The next stop is reading a diary over in Amsterdam. Written in pen and pencil, now there's a clue. You see the fire on wall. An infant until 1952. What's going on? Boy, I'm on the world. Wake up. You're on a hoax train. Boy, I'm off the world. Wake up. Get off the hoax train. The hoax train.